You know, this was supposed to be my weekend off. But no. You got me out here, dragging your heavy butt through burning desert, through dreadlocks sticking out the back of my parachute. You gotta come down here with that attitude, acting all big and bad. And what the heck is that smell? Could be a barbecue! But I am mad, because I get to listen to this episode of the Retro Rewind Podcast.
Thunder Road 3 now online. How can I help you travel through movie space-time today? Course entered. Independence Day, 1996. Is this correct? Course set. Rewinding in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Earth, and welcome Rewinders and new listeners to the Retro Rewind Podcast, where we take a fresh look at movies and games from 15 or more years ago. I'm your captain of the former pod, now the TR3, Francisco Ruiz, and I'm joined by your XO and mine, Paul, the not-so-master interrupter, PaulJPowers.com. Powers!
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy!
Oh, yeah. And also for this discussion of the film Independence Day, we welcome back aboard ship's historian David Bobo Bobke. Hey, Bobo.
Hello. Once again, it is I, the harbinger of podcasting chaos.
Maybe
finally,
that should be...
out of the escape pod that I've been in for the last year or whatever.
I think we found
for
you
for me.
Plenty so, before that, but actually,
that's
Bobo,
what that smell was.
Oh my gosh. This is actually your sixth time on the show. So do you know what that means?
I get to eat?
Well, yeah! I mean, there is that, yes. We have a cake because you're being promoted to
yes.
Chief Historian. Congratulations.
Thank you. Oh, finally.
I know. You've been waiting for this day.
My life's goal achieved.
Now what?
In addition to Baba, we are glad to have back aboard Feelings Officer Patrick Patch Hicks. Hey, Patch.
I am happy to be aboard once again. Thank you guys for having me.
Of course. Glad to
I'm
have
happy
you
that
both
you're
here.
Bored again, too.
Oh, my gosh. And now they have a quick, hopefully not boring, flyby of who we are. Paul, can you give us a quick overview of the production specs for Independence Day? And not Independence Day, not Independence Dia, not any other thing. Not Resurgence, 1996, ID4, Independence Day.
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention, but you said Independence Day, right? All right. Independence Day was released January 21st, 1983, and runs and is rated R. Runs an hour and 50 minutes, and it was directed by Robert Mandel, not Howie's dad or brother. Written by Alice
Paul.
Hoffman. Yeah. What?
That's not the Independence Day we're covering today.
It's you said Independence Day.
And I also said from 1996, if you would have listened.
That could have been brought to my attention yesterday.
I brought to your attention just a moment ago.
That wasn't yesterday. Fine. I'll go back. What year?
1996.
Dang it. Hold on. All right. Independence Day was released July 3rd, 1996, and runs 2 hours and 25 minutes if you're watching the theatrical version. There is an extended version that's also rated PG-13. It was directed by Roland Emmerich and written by Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich, with lead stars being Will Smith, Bill Pullman, Jeff Goldblum, Margaret Cullen, and a few others you may or may not recognize. And if we had time to go through all those few others you may or may not recognize, it would take half the episode.
Right.
So moving on, the music was composed by David Arnold. And you ready for the box office trivia?
I'm ready. Patch and Bob, are you guys ready?
Ready.
Let's do this.
And anyone live in chat, Neko, Star Fox, feel free to join in as well. Go for it, Paul.
All right. Independence Day was made for about $75 million and went on to earn over $817 million at the box office.
Dang. Okay.
So given this fact, how high in the box office do you think it ranks among the movies released theatrically in 1996? We'll go for the top 96.
Top 96. All right. Patch, what is your guess?
I am going to go 3.
3. Okay. Baba, how about you?
I actually thought Paul was going to say we're going to go with the top 1. I was going to guess 1.
1. Okay. But you always guess 42.
It's been
a while. I bailed on the gimmick, which of course has bit me hard the last two shows.
All right, but 1. Let's see in chat. Sean guesses 46. Star Fox guesses 10. I guess I mean I would have guessed 1, but just to be different, I'll say 2 for me.
Oh, so we have 1, 2, and 3.
Well,
and
Sean 10. Changed it to 5 just now, but yes, okay.
Oh. Well, all right, it's too bad. Because it doesn't matter. It was number 1. Babo is correct.
Good job, Babo.
Number 1 in 96, man. According to the-numbers.com.
All right. Well, good job, good job. And thank you for this.
In fact, I was about to say, we've reviewed the top 5 now of 1996.
Oh, what? Okay, let me see if I can think of them. So Independence Day, obviously, we're doing now. Other 96 movies? I'm racking my brain. Nothing else is coming to mind.
All right. Number 5 was Disney animated Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Okay.
Number 4 was The Rock.
Oh!
You're the best.
Number 3 was Mission Impossible that we just recently reviewed. And number 2 is a sequel that's coming out this summer.
Jurassic Park Lost World.
Twister!
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very good. Left hand red, right hand green.
Yeah, yeah. That Twister. Exactly. Well, finally. Thank you for those factoids, Paul. And let's see if any of them factor into our memory mind meld or subsequent roundtable discussion, which we'll get into once Travis has located our target film.
Alert. Alert. Target located. Spoilers incoming. Establishing analysis vector.
Attention, alien visitors. We got your message.
What is it you want us to do?
Die.
But maybe you didn't get ours. Independence Day.
Welcome to Earth.
Rated PG-13.
That's right. Welcome to Earth. And also welcome to our memories that we collected into our memory mind meld synopsis of Independence Day. We get introduced to a ton of characters. Then aliens come down in the clouds like Jesus and smite down all the heathen cities.
Ow.
Some aliens want to flip turn upside down. Some aliens want to flip turn upside down the planet Earth, but humans want them to wait a minute and sit right there and download a virus from one of your computers.
Computers.
Computers. Aliens, is the whole rest of it a wrap, Paul?
Yeah, no, okay. That's up to you. You did so well on that first part.
Oh, yeah, great. Aliens arrive, but will they give back? I can't read.
Yeah, don't worry.
If you just say, I'm Will Smith before you start reading that, you'll be fine.
Oh, okay, let me try that. I'm Will Smith. Aliens arrive, but will
no,
they bring
don't,
back
no, don't, Elvis? Don't, no, 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 just read it.
Wow. They help a lot of people meet him by blowing them up. The 4th of July is much better with an exploding federal building. After finishing Star Trek The Next Generation, Data becomes the alien museum curator. A computer virus from the last millennium takes down advanced alien technology. And the best way to kill aliens, plug up their spaceships with F-16s featuring Up Yours with Cousin Eddie. Humanity is saved and all of the alien ships crash and burn, even though we only saw one actually get defeated. No, we got, you know what? That was untrue, because I saw several defeated at the end there. Some with the pyramids, others.
But we didn't see them
other
get defeated.
Places.
We
well,
just
obviously
saw them
they were
laying
defeated.
Down.
They were defeated. So those memories were decepted. But based on those memories, as flawed as they were, what range did they lead you to predict for the film Independence Day before you rewatched it? Classic, nostalgic, or tragic? And we'll see if these how these compared to our final reigns at the end. But Patch, what was your prediction for Independence Day?
I predicted a classic.
Classic? Babo, how about you?
I predicted nostalgic.
Nostalgic, okay. Paul?
I predicted classic.
Classic. And I, too, predicted classic. I remember always liking this film. So we'll see, though. Maybe on this rewatch, it outstayed its welcome. But we'll see. But before we get into the things we didn't like, let's talk about the things we did like about Independence Day. Let's get to our
best bits.
Fires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Exactly. And let's have Babo light those fires first. What's one thing you liked about Independence Day, Babo? Or I'm curious, did you ever call this ID4, or did you usually just call it Independence Day?
I just call it Independence Day.
Yeah, same here.
ID4 just feels weird.
So, yeah, where's 1, 2, and 3?
Exactly. Wow. Exactly.
So what did you like about not ID4?
I had that problem with Leonard Part 6. I won't go back to that again. But anyway.
And that's not the only problem with that.
True. I'll go with an obvious one here. The president's speech before the final battle.
Really?
I like this.
Really, you're giving him guff now. You're showing your hand this early.
He's getting defensive already because he knows for a fact that I have the bite meter back with me once again.
Yeah.
I
saved it. Yeah.
So right there, ready to go. But anyways, but I like this speech. It's not the greatest speech I've ever heard in a movie, but okay. I still feel a little bit of inspiration, I think, partially because Bill Pullman pulls it off. So
sure.
Good job, Lone Star.
So I like that. Although I've seen this movie enough that my brain starts to wander other places.
Oh.
And when he gets to the end of the speech and he says, "Our Independence Day," my brain started going over to UHF after George Newman says, "We did it, the station's ours," and the music starts playing. And the fireworks go off. So
wow.
I watched too much TV, but yeah.
I am curious, what speech from a movie would you rank higher than this?
Well, that would require more thought on my part. I don't know, a speech probably from a better movie than this one.
Wow.
Better writing. There's a lot of those. I'd have to parse through those.
Oh, so my gosh, Bomber. Fine. You get back to me. Patch? What's something good or bad, Ryan? What's something you liked, you enjoyed about Independence Day?
Well, I think for me, I really like the enormity of the film. So it clocks like in at about 2.5 hours, depending on if you watch the extended is only like about 10 minutes longer. But I'm known in the podcast community these days, specifically on my podcast Feeling Film, as the crouchy old man, like keep my movies to like 1.5 hours, maybe 2 hours.
Amen.
Yeah.
Just because everything is long, right? Everything is like a Marvel movie is no less than 2.5 hours, or as much as I love Christopher Nolan, you're not going to get out of there before sunrise the next day, you know, if you go see a nighttime feature. So I'm very skeptical when it comes to these like 2.5 long movies, but this didn't feel like that. It didn't feel like it was, and this is the first time I've seen it since probably 2000. So
oh, wow.
It came out in 96. So it has been a minute. It's not a favorite of mine, but I remember why I liked it, and I'll go into more detail with other ones, but really the bigness of it and being able to put a lot of stuff into 2.5 hours, most of which sort of made sense in the cohesion of the movie. You've got the introduction of the aliens. They're really big. I mean, they're literally enormous. The global scale of it, the fight. You've got multiple like subplots and groups of people that eventually kind of come together logically or illogically. How to kind of bring all that together and work with all that throughout the course of 2.5 hours. It could get really convoluted, and it really didn't. Like as I'm watching this, I'm like, okay, I follow this. Okay, we spent enough time with Will Smith and his character arc. Let's move over to Bill Pullman. And it didn't linger on any one particular group. And so everything just felt really big. It felt very global. And I think it came out at a time when we weren't getting a lot of that. Now with every superhero movie, it feels like, oh my gosh, the universe is in jeopardy. And I'm like, it doesn't need to be in jeopardy. Just New York or Chicago. Let's keep it local here, which is why I kind of gravitate towards Spider-Man or, you know, The Flash to an extent, even though The Flash kind of gets into more sci-fi stuff. But I, while I lean in more towards the localized kind of trauma or emergencies, I think that Independence Day captured appropriately the magnitude of what was going on and how it affected mainly Americans, because it's Independence Day. It's an American thing, which I think is very appropriate.
No, I think it's no longer an American holiday is what he said.
Not yet. Yeah. At this point, watching the movie, yes, it's very much an American thing. And then it happens on July 4th. We don't start right on Independence Day. We got to lean into it a little bit. So over the course of 48 hours, I got enough to get me to the point when we get to that final conflict with the aliens. So awesome. Yeah, I love the bigness of the movie.
Okay. Very cool. Paul, what's something that was really big for you in this
movie? Also enjoyed the bigness, mainly that of the most of the special effects. And and I think it was the subject matter, really, because it's just fun to see these buildings that you know just blow up spectacularly. So it's fun visuals, especially the explosions.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah.
My first sort of ties into both what you and Patch said, and it's more leaning into the practical effects, which I thought were especially for this time, a lot of it was some of it was CG enhanced, but a lot of it was practical with miniatures and whatnot. And I loved especially because this comes right on the heels of our last Starfire episode where we talked, one of the things I think I mentioned or someone mentioned, the Kodan warship crashes into a moon, and either that moon's so small or the Kodan ship is huge. But in the beginning of this film, we see the satellite just go, get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, and then explodes in the ship to show them enormity of it. And I love that sense of scale, how everything is sort of big. I mean, these ships are massive and you can feel it. It's great in that. And
they said the mothership was like a quarter the size of a moon. Wouldn't that disrupt gravitational pulls of the moon or the ocean a little? Or
I mean, you're not wrong with that.
Again, in a better movie, probably.
Oh my gosh, Pavo.
I mean, you went there, Francisco. I know this is the likes, but it took me right out.
Okay, that's fair. Baba, what's something that didn't take you out, or if it did, you still liked it?
I'll just touch on this as well. The pacing, I enjoyed that as well, and I actually did make a note about the satellite hitting the spaceship, because I did think that was a really, really good shot. It tells us what we need to know early in the movie.
Exactly, yeah.
And it shows it doesn't tell, so that's important. Another one I noted as a like, though, was a number of the actors in this film. Particularly, I liked Bill Pullman as the president. I like that we had government people that I actually would like if they were in charge. Robert Loggia. He could have any political office. I love Robert Loggia. That guy is just fantastic. But Judd Hirsch, I liked him a lot as well. And Jeff Goldblum, I think, is my favorite from the movie. I don't know how many little lines he maybe improvised and how many were in the script, but yes, without the oops, those little Goldblumisms, that really tied.
I was about to say, even if he didn't improv, the way he delivered it was so great.
Yeah, yes. I love also how he brought back must go faster from the half of a good movie Jurassic Park into this movie. So.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a third, or is it two? Never mind. We won't splice it.
I'm compromising with people on a half, so I think that's good.
I gotta go, guys. Sorry, I just got offended.
You're allowed.
The perfection that is Jurassic Park. I think I've defended this. Just go back and listen to Logic make its way onto Retro Rewind.
That's a rarity.
People like to poke the bear with me with some other not movies, so sometimes I poke back. It's all
good. I'm just gonna go to space camp and be happy. Okay.
Okay, good luck fitting through bars unless you're a kid with an adult suit, and then you can fit through them somehow. I don't know how it goes. All right. right, all right, all right, all right. I would like to go back to you, though, Patch, with something else you liked about this film.
So, in a movie this long, I think that sometimes you have trouble figuring out what kind of movie you want to be. Do you want to be action? Do you want to be romance? Do you want to be drama? Mm-hmm. I think that Independence Day had a really great balance of a lot of different genres. So, and I think it has to do with the cast. You guys have alluded to it. Will Smith kind of providing some comedic support and action heroics, Jeff Goldblum being sort of the subtle Jeff Goldblum-esque guy that he is. Mm-hmm. But I found myself never feeling like, man, this just feels hokey, or man, there's too much comedy in this. It didn't feel like it was trying to make fun of an alien invasion, which can be done really well. But it also didn't feel like it was overly dramatized. Like I felt like, man, like I didn't have a problem with the sci-fi inaccuracies, like the moon. Yeah, I wasn't thinking about that because it didn't feel like Arrival, or it didn't feel like Interstellar, where you were using science to actually reinforce some of this stuff. And so what I love is that I'm watching this movie and I'm fully invested in the explosions. And I love the fact that you're going to get New Yorkers or Americans or people, I'm not going to get specific, I don't want to offend, but you're going to get folks that are going to be those folks on the roof being like, yes, alien invasion. And they don't know about the ridiculousness. They're probably going to get destroyed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you have this weight of seriousness within the confines of a movie that knows how to give you action. It knows how to give you comedy. When the president's wife died, like, and he's being embraced by his daughter, it's like, I mean, I don't get emotional, but I was like, getting a little choked up here. My wife was watching it with me. It was late and we were watching it, and she started getting a little emotional. I'm like, if a movie can do that and still say things like, I've got to get me one of these, you know, it's doing something right. So I really think that it found a fantastic balance of multiple types of emotion. You know, this coming from the feel and film guy, I think it succeeds at that. It wasn't trying to lean into the ridiculousness so much at the expense of drama. It wasn't trying to be overly dramatic without pulling you back to, okay, let's have some action. So
yeah,
I mean, I'd forgotten that that Will Smith's co-pilot friend died. I'd forgotten that
the goose roll.
Yeah, very quick. I mean, and that's the other thing is like, okay, we're going to lose some people. This is not something that's necessarily like all the good people are going to live. And so I thought that there were some stakes in it, which is really good. Stakes being grilled, obviously, for
why,
but also stakes. I spelled it right. Never mind. Those kinds of things. They had some value to that.
There were vampires in this?
Yes, there were. And I just stabbed them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, I thought that the tone was really balanced to fit all that kind of stuff into 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And I have got to give me one of these.
Exactly.
I'll second that. And I feel like, actually, I was getting, be transparent. I thought Bill Pullman, the president's speech, I thought I'd put that down as my classic maker. So I was trying to give some some
contention.
Some tension when Bobo mentioned that he liked the speech as a like. It's actually not my classic maker. So I'll just come out with it that I also liked it. Oh my gosh. Bobo wasn't wrong. I actually felt it actually brought a lot more emotion, sort of going off what you were saying, Patch. For me, I got so invested in like when everyone's like clapping and hurrahing at the end, I'm like, yeah, it's just like it to me, it just builds so well. I guess if
the music helps in that.
Yeah. And I will say, I think the Braveheart speech has more that Mel Gibson delivers in Braveheart has a bit more impact just because that's based on a true story as opposed to this, which is not. But yeah, I have trouble thinking of better speeches. There is one quote that I was having coffee with a friend, and he sent me a quote from Theodore Roosevelt that was really impactful, but not at all. I'm not sure what the context of why he was what this quote is about, but regardless, I really like this speech. I thought it was very emotionally charged in the best way. So that's my second like. Paul, give us one more like before we get to our classic makers, please.
I agree that this movie was well balanced, and I put one of the things that I gravitated to was the humor.
Yeah,
and it's easy to, like you said, go a little overboard, you know, try to be funny, and mm-hmm. you wind up with Spaceballs, which is fine. But movies this long in this kind of genre, you'll have it peppered here and there, but not throughout. And I thought this movie did a good job of keeping the humor throughout. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not constant, but it's definitely, it's part of the ride throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Well, I'll just go to my Klausmaker because it sort of feeds right into that. My Klausmaker was, as much as I liked so many of the characters in this, I really did like Will Smith's Captain Steve Hiller. I thought he had such a good back and forth, from very humorous, yeah, guy, get me one of these, and saying oops, all that, to being serious and caring about his fiance, but then wife.
I was about to say, he cares about the strippers, like,
yes, he cares about Jones. Yes, Vivica Fox's character and her son. And I just appreciate how much he seems to care for people, and how I think he plays serious and silly very well. So I really liked him in this role.
And he's part of the welcoming committee.
Welcome to Earth.
Well, I like how hospitable he is. That's so great. Yeah. So that's my classic maker. Patch, why don't you give us your classic maker?
Well, I will always vote in every election for Josiah Bartlett from The West Wing.
Oh.
You know, Martin Sheen's character from The West. Yeah, Martin Sheen.
Okay. Okay.
From The West Wing. Josiah Bartlett will always be my number one president. But if I had to pick a runner-up, it's going to be Bill Pullman as president. Okay. Yeah. Because I really, really liked
the Who does number two work for?
Yeah, who does number two work for? No, I think we talk about the speech, but I think it's what everything leading up to that speech. We start with him in terms of all these little pockets of cast members, mm-hmm. and he's getting ridiculed because he's too young. So the narrative has changed. This too young, he's, you know, full of energy.
The real world, where they're too old.
Exactly, yeah. But I looked at my wife and I said, you know what? I would vote for this guy simply because he reminds me of a John F. Kennedy, an optimistic young guy who wants to, he has a military background, so he's got some experience in leadership. And I think that that's the difference between leadership and superheroic. So when you have someone like him, he's a leader. Mm-hmm. And yes, he can fight. But when I look at superheroes or heroes in the movie, I'm looking at Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum, because they have that kind of sacrificial thing, which I got a little from a presidential standpoint. One of my nitpicks is that I appreciate him willing to fight and mm-hmm. go into the battle, but he is the only political member of the cabinet at this point. Like, there's nobody else. Everybody's destroyed. So leadership would have been lost if he had been killed. And I appreciate the fact that he wants to be in front of that. Mm-hmm. And so I think his through line is what connects all the different events that take place. It starts with him mm-hmm. and it finishes with a handshake with him and Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum. Mm-hmm. But I think it's his character that culminates to that speech, but also seeing how he's dealt with loss and how he deals with ridicule and all this stuff. His character is the central focus of all of this going through. Mm. And by the end of the movie, I'm like, yes, if I didn't vote for you in the last election, I'm sure as heck going to vote for you in the next election. There's only three people running and only 8,000 people being able to vote because everybody else has been destroyed. But
yeah, if that many, yeah.
But the fact is, I think that I appreciate showing vulnerability in political figures, which we don't get. We get the fluff. We get the sensationalism. Yeah. We get the good and bad ridicule mm-hmm. or whatever. So watching his story kind of play out throughout, I think he's to me the best part of the movie, because he's the one that anchors everything else, in my opinion. So yeah, okay. Bill Pullman, president. Yeah. Today we celebrate our Independence Day. Let's go.
And he, I was going to say, he really rebounds well too, because he's got the criticism early on, and then he makes he doesn't get people out of the cities in time, so they lose so many people, but he's always steady. He's mourning over people, you know, on Air Force One, but he's not tearing himself apart about mm-hmm. it. He knows he's got to maintain. He's got to be the leader. Yeah. And well, that leads up to that speech, as he said.
And I think what makes it great is the fact that he's dealing with all that grief. His wife has just passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like she died of natural causes. She died of an injury that could have been prevented. Like that's the thing. And so to see him, in not Independence Day Resurgence, but in my sequel, he has to deal with the grief of that. I'm like, all this stuff, he's going to have to deal with that. So for him to be able to compartmentalize it, to continue to lead, to me, that's a strong person. But knowing that I can believe that he has enough vulnerability that at some point after all this is done, he's going to take a breath and he's going to weep just deeply for everything that's happened. He's going to go through that period. Whereas with a static, unnamed president, he's just a figurehead at that point. So watching his whole story play out with his wife and, you know, getting them connected again, the length of the movie works in that regard to get us to care about him and his wife and wanting them to be together, and then seeing her, you know, die shortly after he's gotten a chance to see her, it just makes it more impactful. Whatever happens after that with the, you know, the culmination and the big fight and stuff, so good stuff.
Not only did he have vulnerability, but I also appreciated his integrity throughout it. I mean, he didn't just take the million space bucks. He only took 248 bucks for lunch, gas, and tolls.
Exactly. I was looking for his Winnebago. I couldn't find him. So, so I was.
Well, you have to go to New York where he's the king. He might have it there.
That's right. That's right. Make sure you have matched luggage to.
So what you're saying is they didn't need this whole virus concoction. They just needed some raspberry to beat those aliens.
Exactly. Yeah,
to jam their radar. Sure.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
When did they go to Plaid?
That's later.
That's later. Okay, gotcha.
When will then be now? Anyway, let's get back to Independence Day. Babbo, what was your classic maker for this film?
I'm curious. We were talking about how great Bill Pullman was as the president, and he was only number two on the list, so... I got to watch The West Wing, man. That sounds awesome. Anyways.
The first four seasons. First four seasons only. Don't worry about four? The five, okay. six, yeah. Five, six, gotcha. And seven. Okay. Don't worry about those. First four.
All right. I'll keep that in mind. When it comes to greatest American heroes, I'm going to go with William Cat number one from the TV show, The Greatest American Hero. Okay. Number two on my list, however, is going to be the late, great Russell Case, played by Randy Quaid. And that final... That final moment that he has where he decides to make the ultimate sacrifice and take his armed with a missile plane basically use the plane to probe the alien vessel as allegedly 10 years prior. But anyways, Russell in this world, Russell Case has to go down as one of the great American heroes. Really, I think if you're at all into this movie, even if you're watching it and it's not totally your thing, I still think you got to feel a little bit of excitement at that moment when he lands the blow and there's that huge explosion, all that fire spreading throughout the alien vessel, and you realize we won.
Yeah.
And if you're really into that, into the movie, it's just a million times greater. And absolutely, again, Bill Pullman, when he's looking back and he says, he did it. The son of a female dog did it. You know, it's like every time I see the movie and he delivers that line, I'm just getting a little,
Aww.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's Russell Case's sacrifice. That's a classic maker for me.
Okay. Yeah. That's totally fair. Paul? That leaves you. What's your classic maker for ID4, a.k.a. Independence Day?
You mentioned Will Smith and Bill Pullman and Jeff Goldblum. My classic maker is the cast.
Oh, okay.
It is so wide and varied. I think they all did a great job. Mm-hmm. And it felt like every 15 minutes, like, oh, there's someone I haven't seen like in years from this TV show. Like, it was great. So I enjoyed the cast. To me, that's the best part of the movie.
Gotcha. I will say that I feel like Patch is doing a little bit of a disservice with best presidents, because I think we can all agree that the best president is President Laura Roslin, played by none other than Mary McDonnell.
So, liar.
What are you talking about, liar?
That's what she says in 94, right?
Oh. Oh, that's
but also you're a liar.
Oh, I thought you were actually calling me liar. No, I like that.
She's clearly got through Francisco Shields with that.
She played
BSG,
the president's wife. Is that did I miss something?
She played the president's wife in this movie, but she plays the president of the 13 colonies in Battlestar Galactica,
the reimagined series on sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so she's top five for sure, absolutely, absolutely, but not number one.
All right, fine. We can agree.
You'll see why. Watch The West Wing.
We can agree that Francisco is right. All right, that leaves.
We all know Cousin Eddie gets the job done. That's who I'm voting for.
Well, we've all talked about the things we liked about this movie. Obviously, there was a lot, but there's probably some stuff we didn't like. So let's get into the wait a second. Oh, darn it, guys. I'm sorry. There's one more thing I like that I really, really wanted to share with you all. So let me share that real quick before we get into our dislikes, and that would be The Untold Podcast. The Untold Podcast is a speculative fiction podcast utilizing the genres of sci-fi, fantasy, and horror, among others, in order to engage the culture's imagination from a Christian worldview. Every month, Nathan James Norman produces and narrates a new story presented in a unique and dynamic way. Check out The Untold Podcast at www.untoldpodcast.com to listen and leave them a review on Apple Podcasts.
That's great, Francisco.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it, Paul.
Yeah, but what does The Untold Podcast have to do with Independence Day?
I mean, they do sci-fi stories. This is a sci-fi story, so...
Do they do Independence Day? Then what does this have to do with Independence Day?
Sorry, my core... weapon just exploded, so let me restart. Okay, it doesn't have that much to do with Independence Day. How about some trivia about ID4, Paul? Would you like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you all realize Independence Day holds the record for most miniature model work to appear in one film? Model shop supervisor Michael Joyce estimated that more miniatures were used for this film than in any other two films combined. And due to the advances in digital technology since this film's release, most experts believe this record may stand forever. So my question,
cheaper that way.
My question to you all is, what miniature from any sci-fi film would you love to own?
Oh, wow. I would go for the Millennium Falcon.
Millennium Falcon. I figured that'd be a popular choice, but okay. How about you, Bobo?
Oh, man. Anything from Star Trek would be pretty awesome. Even something obscure.
Okay. Tricorder? I guess that's not super obscure.
Any miniature. Okay. I'll probably lose it if it's too small, though.
Yeah.
And how about you, Patch?
The Gunstar from Last Starfighter.
Oh, that's okay.
Cool. It's not a miniature, obviously, in the movie. It's CG, but I would love to have...
That's not... You have to go with an actual miniature, so... CG things don't work. Pick something else.
But they can make a miniature of it.
All right. Yeah, Paul.
Yeah. Great trivia, Francisco.
Thanks, Paul.
Now that we've all had some trivial fun, let's find out what memories you, our awesome rewinders, had about Independence Day.
Let's do it. David Gardner starts this by saying, sitting in the front row of the theater because that was the only seats available. Watching it thinking, this is H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds.
That's later from Spielberg, but close enough.
Yeah.
All right. Dustin Warford says, great action flick. Welcome to Earth.
Welcome to Earth.
Yeah.
Aaron Wallace seconds that with, welcome to Earth.
Welcome to Earth.
And Celeste Morris says, it's a yearly tradition to watch it every 4th of July.
Nice. Kevin Joshua Burnham says, it is so dumb, so stupid, so idiotic. But so much fun. Just have things blow up on a grand scale and make it a cheesy type of love letter from the old sci-fi for a modern audience of its time frame. Money in the bank.
Jesse Cleva Vidal says, 1,000% a classic.
Jeremy Shield says, tragic. Liked in the theater, saw it as lame the second viewing.
Womp womp. And Jeff... Eames left a gif of Brent Spiner and Will Smith. I don't know why that's relevant here, but okay.
Well, that was something he remembered, but I can't vocalize a gif to you guys that well, so I put that in.
I'm just surprised you tried. That's all.
Move along. Okay, we're moving.
We're walking.
Thank you all for sharing your memories. And maybe Jeremy Shields is on to something with things we didn't like about this movie. And let's get to that now.
Worst Wuss.
And we will begin with Paul. What's something you didn't like about this film?
This is a big, fun, giant screen movie with big, fun, giant explosions. But there are some things you just have to turn your brain off, like, you know, a little virus from the 90s, like, gonna take down a whole spaceship. Things like, but what's, you know what, the dumbest, the most stupidest part?
Hold on. Real quick, I do want to hear the dumbest, most stupidest part, but can you say the same thing for War of the Worlds, which you just mentioned? Because the aliens in that are destroyed by a little cold virus that we had.
Well, that's different.
How is
that
different?
That'll kill you. Because people in the air. Die of the flu every year.
Yeah, and computer systems die of viruses all the time. Yeah,
but not from like last millennium.
I don't know. I feel like I think it's a sound thing that could happen.
Is it plausible? Sure. Yes. Is it likely? No.
Well, it's not likely that invaders that have gone from... Wait, I'm making an argument against myself. I'll be quiet now. What's your actual...
this part took me out of the film like no other. Okay. This is right after... Okay. Do you remember this part, this line here? Mm.
What happened, Mommy?
I don't know, baby.
It's like, look, you little rascal, you were just shooting at the aliens, and they fired back, and the big explosion happened. This happened like almost an hour into the movie. Like, this is after the aliens, like, shot everything. Like,
yes.
What do you mean, what happened? Audiences have been plagued with trailers for months about this. They know what's happening. How could characters an hour into the film not, like... Boom, there's aliens attack. What happened? And the mother's so stupid too. She goes, I don't know, babe. I'm like, what the heck?
I think it's more a matter of they didn't understand how the weapon just wiped out everything, or
and
if
justified
it was something
doesn't help.
Okay, fine.
Aliens attack.
So you just wish she said that.
Yeah, or some or not even have it in the film.
I mean, that's fair too. I'll be sooner to be on that train than the other. But all right, that's fair that bothered you. Baba, was there any weird dialogue choice that bothered you?
I had a few problems with this movie, and that scene in general didn't even make my list, but I mean, that's been debated online. Like, shouldn't they have been dead because the fire could have still gotten in where they were?
Yeah, they never closed the door. Yeah, yeah.
Right. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
But, you know, it's amazing how many people survived, like Hiroshima and all these other explosions.
True. Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah. As long as the dog lives, that's the important thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't this the movie where they did the test audience where they killed the dog and then like people revolted?
Really?
Basically, wow. So they put the dog back in. Yeah. Sorry, Francisco, there goes your stakes.
Right? Jeez. How do I know that lives are on the line if you don't kill the dog?
Yeah. People, fine.
Yeah. Oh, anyway. You
know, and I'm... Yes, as mentioned earlier, I am one of those older fuddy-duddies that doesn't like longer movies generally, and that's not even on my list here, but one of my big issues was the alien strategy for wiping us out. I get the general strategy of you bring the mothership, it breaks into a bunch of other ships, and you attack the entire planet at once with your primary weapon. I kind of get that. But there's little other things that I didn't quite get. Like, if the humans don't know what you're doing yet, why destroy the welcome wagon? Like, why not just let them sit there for a while?
The helicopter that flashes the lights? Yeah, that's another thing I was going to say that doesn't make sense. Like, why?
Yeah.
And another thing, too, is if they know kind of what they're doing and where they have to hit. And I mean, it's even commented on in the movie. They knew exactly where to hit us.
Mm-hmm.
Delivered by the great Robert Loggia. wouldn't they know, like, the important people are going to be leaving the White House, so maybe send out some of those smaller, you know, individual ships to go take out Air Force One and ships like that that have no defenses whatsoever, so they should be able to be taken out pretty easily. Because if they take the president out too, we're really hosed because then, you know, all of our leadership's going to be gone.
They didn't know that much. They didn't know what Air Force One was. That's
it. Yeah, they knew to use our satellites against us, but they didn't try watching the important channel. They're busy watching Leave It to Beaver or something. I don't know what was going on.
Not like
and yeah, and then a couple other things I didn't get. I mean, their ships seem to move a little slow for me. Maybe that's I'm getting too far into it, but I don't know how they're supposed to consume our natural resources if they're just setting everything on fire.
Well, just the cities, it's their ocean water is that what they wanted.
Okay. Oh, you think the water I can understand. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
I'm guessing because it's one thing they didn't destroy.
Yeah, it's a fair point. But yeah. Yeah, the alien strategy in this was a little lacking for me, so that bugged me.
Okay, that's fair. Patch, what's something that was a little lacking for you?
Well, I think that as someone who likes sci-fi and the idea of Area 51 that has since been like, oh yeah, it does exist. Hey guys, just kidding, for the last 50 years, you know? At the time, it hadn't been declassified, and I really wanted to spend more time with Brent Spiner and company, just knowing more about the tech and things like that. I mean, we got a good chunk of it, and the extended edition spends a couple of more minutes.
Yeah,
there's this great scene. I don't know if you guys are watching the extended edition, but he's talking to Jeff Goldblum's character Levinson, and Levinson's like saying all this smart stuff, and he's like, "We didn't know what half this crap did, and we still don't." I'm like, it's very, very non-scientific the way that he's talking to him.
Yeah,
and he's like, and at the end of the scene, he's like, he says, "How did you know how to do all this? Like, we're complete," basically saying we've been complete nincompoops for the last 3 days and probably the last 25, 30 years.
Yeah,
but I kind of wanted more of that. I think Brent Spiner is great. He's one of those actors that, you know, he's unfortunately typecast Data, and he's not in a lot of things, but the character he plays here is so fantastic because he's real peculiar. He's just kind of zany. He even says, "They don't let us get out here much, or get out much." And I'm like, "No, they don't," and that's okay. But I really wanted more of that, of the interaction with him, and really, again, you can't do this in a movie that's already that long to go into more mythology about the last 50 years.
Yeah.
I get why, but I, for my own sake, just kind of wanted to know more about the tech. Like, how did you know that this happened? How did you know that they, you know, as he was explaining how certain things worked, it was, you know, he didn't know more than he did, and I just kind of wanted that to be expanded upon.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. That's kind of, I think that's a, even though that's a dislike, I think that's a positive for the movie that they made this world and you want to know more about it. So
I
get that. That
I see what you did there. Throwing in a like disguised as a dislike.
I do that, boys. I do that all the time. You know, I have a hard time. If I'm going to be on a show, I'm not going to just, I don't want to dog it, unless it's The Jungle Book, in which case I have no problem saying that that's a terrible movie.
Whoa.
Excuse me. Wow. Sorry. Go back to our show.
You know, anyway, something though similar to, I think, Baba, you sort of touched on this with, you said the ships moved too slow. That specifically didn't bother me, but a lot of the physics of the F-18s, not so much the alien ships, they're alien, I don't really know how they're going to maneuver, but the F-18s felt more like they're swishing through air, especially in the last big climactic battle. I didn't feel like they're actually, I'm used to Top Gun physics here, so give me that instead.
Do a barrel roll!
Or that, sure. Which, by the way, Star Fox 64... they had this, I don't know if you guys play it, but they have this whole level that's pretty much a homage, a ripoff of this last battle in IG4, which is great. I enjoyed playing that, but just a little fun.
Hey, Einstein, I'm on your side.
Okay, thank you, Falco. Anyway, so the weird physics of the planes bothered me, but I mean...
What, flapping too much in the wind? Or?
No, they just felt like they were... They were just, I don't know, moving side to side in this weird way that I don't think is typical of how planes move. I could be wrong, but it seemed CG to me. It seemed early CG movement physics to me. That's what took me out. Let's go back to Paul. What's something else you didn't like?
On that is the visuals. I said one of my likes is the visuals, but one of my dislikes is the visuals, because A lot of the compositing shots don't hold up to today. You see, like, instead of black on black, it's gray on darker gray on black, and you can kind of tell the different plates that are used.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
And, you know, cars coming at you, like, you can tell what the layers are. Well, with today's eyes, because, you know, we've watched so many of these, we can kind of see. And that's a bummer that it pulls you out, and I have to constantly tell my brain to turn off, especially as the movie gets going later and later. There's more and more of these kinds of shots, but yeah.
Gotcha.
So, okay. I mean, yeah, they used a lot of models, but the way it's layered on top of each other, it doesn't hold up, unfortunately.
So I didn't really notice that. I'm just watching on 1080p, so maybe that's the difference.
Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
I don't know, maybe. But let's go back to Baba. What's something else you didn't like?
For a lot of the really cool things that are in this movie, the destruction of the White House and blowing up the Empire State Building and all that kind of stuff, there's some great stuff in there, but there's some stuff that they opted not to show us that I really would have liked to have seen, and they could have just made a little quick thing. At one point, the great Robert Loggia comments on how NORAD has been completely destroyed. I kind of would have liked to have seen that.
A whole mountain destroyed.
Well, they didn't want to show you that NORAD had moved to a Toys R Us and they being blown up.
What?
And give away government secrets.
Man, that just as long as Jeffrey the Giraffe survives, that's the important thing.
Yeah. Anyway. It was the beginning of the downfall. We didn't know it at that point.
Oh, my word.
Oh, rough times. But yeah, the destruction of NORAD was one thing I would have liked to have seen. The Statue of Liberty is in the ocean.
Oh, yeah. And we
didn't see that get knocked over.
That was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking, I don't know if I've seen any newer Roland Emmerich movies, so I was like, is he maybe saving the destruction of the Statue of Liberty for one of his later disaster movies? And that's why I didn't do it. But anyway, that's giving him too much credit.
On that point, I do seem to recall Godzilla, or Zilla, I think is what it's called now. Like, you see it, you don't see it hitting the head off of the Statue of Liberty, but you see the Statue of Liberty head rolling into the street. Am I remembering that right, Paul? Do you recall?
Or I don't know. I'm old. I don't remember things.
All right, like never mind. Dallas, whenever you listen to this, if you do, or Monster Nathan Marchand, or Drew,
anyone in the chat,
people, let us know, or people in the chat. Yeah, even better.
Okay. There you go. Yeah, but so yeah, it's stuff like that. Those primarily are the main ones. There's also that point where they're in the mothership, and one of the comments, "What's going on there?" And it says the other guy says, "Looks like they're preparing for an invasion." I would have liked to have seen a little bit of that. I mean, throughout the movie, we don't really see the alien side of it, so I can kind of see not getting too into that. But
yeah,
I would have. I'm kind of curious how exactly the aliens were, you know, planning to attack. Was it going to be like that Tom Cruise War of the Worlds movie, which I hope you never have to watch, or something else? So as long as the movie as it was, I'm surprised they left some of this stuff out, because it could have been done real quick.
Yeah.
Would have been cool.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I personally would have liked to have seen at least one other of the big, not mothership, the big sort of a planet killer. I forget what it was. I had the names up earlier. I think I closed the window, but the ones that came down and had the primary weapon, that was the main big ones. I would have liked to see another one of them actually like destroyed with, I assume they didn't just send a pilot up to destroy, to suicide each one. I assume they used missiles for most of them, but I would have liked to have seen that.
Are you saying that you agree that they didn't show the destruction of the other UFOs?
I saw them on the ground in fire. Yes,
but you didn't see them actually being destroyed. Which is what the memory mind meld said that you disagreed with.
I saw their destroyed carcasses.
Well, yes.
I didn't see them being destroyed.
Which is what the memories hold up.
Oh my gosh, fine.
100% accurate.
Do you want me to detract my deception? Is that what you want?
Yes.
There you go. Somehow that was it.
That's not entirely accurate.
Thank you. Patch, why don't you give us an accurate estimation of something you didn't like?
So you guys hit on some of the logic, alien logic, in how they attacked Earth, which I agree with. There's a lot of knowledge and not knowledge. Like, how do you know to destroy the Empire State Building and the White House and yet not know that important people are leaving in Air Force One? Like, how do you not know the politics behind any of that, or the importance of those things?
Destroy NATO next, which is bizarre to me.
Yeah, so there's definitely some illogic stuff there. I really was more, I'm okay to forgive that because aliens can be stupid sometimes, even with all that tech. You know, I think even Brent Spiner said they're you know, surprisingly delicate given their technology, which is beyond, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of want to put the spotlight on the questionable or unanswered questions with the people of Earth.
Yeah, like how does Will Smith knock out an alien with one punch with the exoskeleton on it?
Well, that's fine. I mean, I think he's got superheroic strength there because you know, he's Will Smith. And
oh, yeah, he was Ali. But Chris Rock stood up to him.
Let's keep it in the world of sci-fi and fantasy if we can. Oh, okay. Right. But like, just as a sort of a highlight reel, there are three kind of questions I have. Like, how did they actually destroy the aliens? So this is something that I've thought about even since 96. Mm-hmm. Randy Quaid does the, you know, does the probe, right?
Yes.
In order to do that, what has to happen with the alien spaceship? It has to actually get ready to fire its gun, right?
Right.
There's no little hole that you can go up there. So
maybe there is.
No, you have to. I mean, at this point, all I saw was that there was no opening until we pissed off the aliens enough to open.
Maybe it's the hole is the size of Womp Rat's back home, and you just have to
two meters.
Know.
Yeah,
exactly. Can't believe that somebody's that good as Luke Skywalker. Okay, because you're gonna need.
Well, if Cousin Eddie can do it,
well, we'll get there. But okay. The other thing is that I don't understand. I guess Jasmine and Will Smith, they kind of have like telekinesis or something like that. So Jasmine knows where to go to drive in that big giant truck to find the first lady. I know she wasn't looking for the first lady, but she went off the beaten path and found the first lady in a section of New York or wherever she was. And then later on, Captain
on the
Hill
way to the base that was destroyed.
Yeah.
She didn't.
Yeah. That. Happens to find the first lady. And then Will Smith happens to find her.
Yeah. Those spotlights from the helicopter can find anybody. Like,
well, very specific. So there's a lot of just sort of, for me, some Deus Ex Machina things going on. Like, we need to get these together. I'm so glad that they got together, but the method to get them together was a little bit like, I need a little bit more tension, guys. Like, they need to struggle a little bit longer before we can get them together.
Again,
it's a big movie, and you're doing a lot in that first third of destroying the Earth and separating everybody. But, you know, I don't think Will Smith's that good.
Well, it's part of his Ali powers to, like, you know, hijack a helicopter and then go find his true love. Like, he knows exactly where she is somehow.
Here's how I justify it in my head anyway, is that he told her to go to El Toro. So he's probably just hoping that she made it. And if she did make it, that's where she would be.
Right.
So that's why he flies to there.
Do you know how huge that area is? I know. It's part of his pursuit of happiness.
it's a bunch of rubble, like not Barney rubble, just rubble. Okay. So you've got both she and he are going through this on the ground in the air, and they just happen to find the people that are important enough to the plot. So it's just a little bit far-fetched for me to think, that would make sense. And, you know, that and the whole, how did the other, 18 smaller ships get destroyed? Did they get provoked to open up there? Yeah. I don't see how that happens, because one thing has to happen in order for, I mean, I didn't think they were going to sacrifice a pilot for every country necessarily, but you have to find a way to open up that ship in order for it to.
So in Star Fox 64, once you destroy enough of the smaller attacker ships triggers the final like form of the mothership. So that's all, they're just doing that.
Gotcha. So when they destroyed the first one, the other one just like the hatch just kind of opened, right? Like,
it was
like,
exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Why won't our hatch work? It's completely open. Close it. I can't. Here they go.
It's part of the virus that they uploaded. It made them open up those. Yeah. Yeah. That's
it's the hatch from Lost that only opens with like the right code, right?
Anyway. Yeah.
Anyway,
so there we go. That's my second one.
This is my second one before we get to our tragic makers is, and this goes back to something that some of you guys said earlier with the effects. Oh, Paul mentioned the effects. There are some weird faux slow-mos in this.
Oh, yes.
That were bothering to me. Yes. The dog jumping in, that was a weird one.
There are several. Then, even like half the explosions had moments of weird slows. I know you want to milk it, but you can tell where it slows down.
Yeah, just, and just it's not like a Matrix. Frame, just up your frame filming if you want true slow-mo.
The most explosions at 300 frames per second.
Well, go 5,000 so frames per second.
Well, I don't know if they could back then, all but right. I think what it was like, oh, that's too slow. So let's, it's, if you ever worked on these like graphics, mm-hmm. like, oh, that's too slow. All right. So let's speed it up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too fast. Well, let's slow it down. We can't, we have to fake slow it now because yeah. we've cut out those already. Those extra frames. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But the one that bothered me the most for some reason, and I just like, I knew it was coming because I could just remember it. It bothered me since I first saw this movie, or one of the first times, was Will Smith is piloting him and Jeff Goldblum are in the attacker that they got from Area 51. And he thinks he's going forward, but then he backs up and it hits the wall. And there's just this like, the attacker goes, whoa, in this weird slow-mo. I'm like, what are we doing right now? What are we doing?
That they did in film in 300.
Yeah. So just weird oddities like that. And in a movie that has so many good effects, I think those
the bad
stand
ones
out
stand out
more.
More.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Called it.
So that leaves our tragic makers. Let's begin with Patch. What did you hate most about Independence Day?
My dislike of dislikes, not my hate. I don't want to be that guy.
What do you wish died?
Not in this movie, at least.
of the subplots mm-hmm. that we get throughout the movie, I got to say, this time around, Randy Quaid and his family, I didn't care for it. I thought it contributed really, it didn't contribute enough for me besides the hero shot moment at the end.
But the hero shot moment at the end wouldn't have mattered as much.
It wouldn't give it to the president. Give him one last.
Let him go up and die.
I mean, if he's going to do that anyway, I have no issue. I've got Josiah Bartlett in my back pocket. As my president,
oh so my gosh.
And Barf is the second man. So he'll take over, right?
But it's less about that and more about the fact that when we get introduced to him, he's drunk. He's a crop duster. He's a failure, all that stuff. And he's got this tension with his family that one of his sons has some kind of medical condition who breaks his medicine. I would love to have seen that sort of become a factor, like, oh my gosh, he needs his medicine. We have to get him somewhere. And then getting them to Area 51 because he's part of that convoy, that would have been some tension there. And it would have made me care more about that family dynamic. I don't think that his moment was necessarily like dumb necessarily. I mean, I think he earned it for sure. I think Randy Quaid's great in that. And I think all that, but the just the whole story of their family dynamic and the stuff that they were dealing with didn't really feel like it had much of an arc to me. So I could have done without it is what I'm saying. Like his hero shot could have been accomplished some other way because I wasn't feeling sacrificial when he died.
Yeah.
It would have been more sacrificial for me if the president had made the sacrifice or if Jeff Goldblum or someone in that regard, but he just didn't, his whole section of the movie, that whole subplot just didn't fly the way that these other ones did. I didn't have as much invested in their story because I don't think we got enough of their story.
Well, the problem, Patch, is when you hire discount Keanu Reeves and discount Justin Gordon-Levitt, you're going to get these issues when it's just like
the B-roll. Yeah.
The B-roll guy. I don't care about these people. I don't.
Yeah.
No, that was
I feel that way about Final Destination, where you have like the B cast of like the great 90s, like the Freddie Princes and stuff. You get basically their stunt doubles.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
And
I felt that too. Yeah. I mean, and I noticed that wasn't necessarily the thing that led to me. Yeah, you're right. If I get a knockoff Keanu and a knockoff Joseph Gordon. Yeah, Joseph Gordon is going to contribute to my dislike. So, exactly. Love the moment and he's funny, but I don't know that all the stuff going on with his family was enough to get me to care about his sacrifice. Like, he just sacrificed for himself. I didn't feel the loss like his kids did.
Yeah, that was actually my tragic maker too. Just that the subplot, especially you don't see this in the theatrical version, so I never really I had sympathy for his family more, but I watched the extended version as I think most of us did. His not discount Keanu Reeves, but discount Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Throws his medicine and breaks it. And he's like, I don't need this. Well, then I'm like, fine, kid, be sick. I don't know. I'm just like, I could not believe that that's why he was sick throughout. I'm like, all right, well, you made your bed, you lie in it now, I guess.
Right. The problem is that you're not invested in enough to care, because like you, and I understand, like, fine, kid, go ahead and die. That's what you did. Now, if your son did that, you wouldn't be like, fine, kid, go ahead and die.
My son wouldn't break his medicine.
Well,
that's right.
Well, if he did.
He wouldn't. That's the point. I guess here's the thing. I guess it seems like Randy Quaid's character isn't the best dad. He's a great pilot, we find out. But
oh, so that's where the difference is. You're a better dad than Randy Quaid.
Well.
I can buy that.
No. I don't know about that. I think that you could make a case of like there. He doesn't necessarily have the best relationship. He cares about his kids, but yeah, maybe he wasn't there for that. I don't really know that whole family dynamic. And maybe if we knew more about it, we would care more when he sacrifices, getting to Patch's point. But I feel like we don't. For all the screen time this family's given, we don't know much about their inner dynamics.
You know what would have been better? If Randy Quaid called his brother, who was an enemy mine, who's used to fighting these aliens.
Oh, I thought you were going for Chevy Chase.
No, that's his cousin. Randy Quaid's brother, Dennis Quaid. Have Dennis Quaid come in and wipe out a few. That would have been
Ride Dragon? It totally changed the dynamic of this.
There
this
we go.
Fight.
We're talking fantasy. Yeah. Yes. And you wouldn't have to cut Randy Quaid's family scenes out and put that in. And
is that the best you can do, aliens?
Anyway.
Wow. Now that we're done with that extreme tangent, let's go to Baba. What was your tragic maker for Independence Day?
I'm surprised it hasn't been mentioned yet, because I hate this aspect of the film. And I'm saying the word hate because this drives me nuts every single time I see the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing.
Is it the 9:16 aspect ratio? Or is it the 2:35?
It's every aspect ratio.
Oh, okay. My gosh.
It's the issue with Area 51. And when that finally comes up, and then Nimzicki says, well, that's not entirely true. We find out it's an actual thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't tell the president because of plausible deniability.
Sure.
We've known that there are aliens. The cat's out of the box. I mean, we already knew there were aliens, and he didn't think that, gee, maybe I should mention something about Area 51.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The president is going out to the entire nation and mm-hmm. even the world, saying the question of whether we are alone in the world, in the universe, has been answered. We know there's aliens now. Yeah. How do you not think to say something about Area 51?
So can I give you some of my headcanon as to why this is? And this is why this only came to me in this viewing.
But so you agree that the president was okay to fire him? Because I think the Bill Pullman felt like you did when he found out.
Oh, yeah. I didn't put Nimzicki on my hate list, but I thought that was a little uneven of a character, but.
So okay.
That's another issue.
Here's my Francisco's Fabulous fan fiction is fabulous. Though it's not really a rewrite of anything, it's just an add to. I think
make it longer.
Nimzicki was actually in cahoots with the aliens. And so he kept everything on. That's how they knew where to target, what cities to go for. I feel like that, and that's why they didn't fire necessarily on where he was. That's why he survived through the end, because he is in cahoots with them the whole time.
That's plausible, plausible.
And I mean, that's why he wouldn't have said anything, because he wanted to make sure the destruction happened as much as possible. And yeah.
If they ever do an animated series of Independence Day, maybe they'll try that out.
Maybe.
And that would be one of my dislikes. But moving on.
Wow, but anyway. Thanks, Paul.
But yeah, that whole thing of it didn't come up until, you know, later in the movie. I think it was actually an hour into the movie, which feels
like everything steeper, happened an hour in the movie. At least.
Yeah, true. And so there's that. And then I also thought, like, the Area 51 people didn't reach out. I mean, to say, like, hey,
seems like there should have been more communication or something. Yes.
Yeah, like the there's stuff going on here. The little bells and whistles are going on with the ship that haven't before. So we should probably pay attention to this. And my fourth point on this was just writing equals bad, because just if I were rewriting the script, this would drive me nuts. How do I explain that Area 51 just didn't come up when all this stuff with the aliens starts?
Yeah.
And it, I just, that's such a huge hole in this for me. And it just drives me bonkers every
very
time.
Very fair. Very fair.
I like how they bring it up through the dad. It's funny.
Roswell, New Mexico. I like that character, by the way.
Judd Hirsch does a great job.
He's fun.
That leaves you, Paul. What wasn't the Judd?
Well, I'm going to agree with Francisco and Patch here in my tragic maker, but also disagree completely with that.
When he said that, discount Keanu and Joseph. Okay, interesting.
No, when he said that the length was good, it didn't feel too long. This movie felt way too long to me.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did watch.
Get off your phone, edition. Paul. Get off your phone.
But this, I thought, there is no need to go into so many backstories. We don't need to see the stripper at the strip club. Yeah. You know, we don't need to see so many added. This could have easily been well under 2 hours, if not an hour and a half. And I wonder, like,
I don't think it could be an hour and a half. 2 hours, I'll give you, but not an hour and a half.
Under 2 hours, easily, I think.
2 hours.
Well, I'm cutting out more. But I like all the cameos of the people. You know, you keep Kevin Arnold's dad in there from what was his Wonder Years and all these other people, like, you know,
and Baldwin I like seeing.
Yeah. So there's so many, you know, bring Chuck in too. Well, this was before him. But anyway, I just thought it was too long. It dragged and unnecessarily so. So that's the biggest flaw in this for me.
Alrighty, guys. Well, now that we've entered all our firing trajectories into the firing computer, Travis, do you have a final firing solution for us?
Firing solution complete. Salvo authority accepted. Ratings prepared to launch.
I like Travis. He gets the salvo authority.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, do we rate Independence Day a classic? We'd recommend anyone go see this film, whether or not they've seen it before. A nostalgic, it's worth rewatching if you remember watching it as a kid or young adult and you liked it then. Yeah, I'll give it a rewatch. It's worth your time to do that. But if you've never seen it before, probably go check out something, watch some other movie. Or do we rate it a tragic? It's not worth anyone's time. If you've never seen it before, keep it that way. And if you have seen it before, don't sully any good memory you have of it with a rewatch. So let's begin with Patch, who had predicted classic. Where did Independence Day actually end up for you?
Well, it shouldn't be any doubt. I go classic again on this one, too.
What? I am shocked.
2.5 hours of classic. Sorry. 2 hours and 22 minutes of classic and 8 minutes of tragic.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Classic for Patch. Awesome. Bobo, you had predicted nostalgic. Where did it end up for you?
You know, I was debating what I was going to finally rate this with all the things that drove me nuts about it. And this is my sixth review on this podcast. And this is the review that this is the rating that I feel the dirtiest about giving.
Ooh, okay.
Because I'm changing it from nostalgic and I'm going to go to classic.
Whoa.
Because I didn't want to on one hand, but it's... Because there's so much that's so stupid about this movie. And I don't feel right giving it a classic, but it was a big, huge summer blockbuster movie, which gives it a point. And it, you know, there's, when somebody asks me, is that movie good? You know, I see a movie and I've got two different friends asking me if that movie's good. One's asking me, Is it good as in it? Does it have good writing, good acting, good cinematography? Is it a well-crafted piece of cinema?
Mm-hmm.
And the other one just wants to know, is it entertaining?
Mm-hmm.
And this is absolutely entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's up there kind of as a best in genre as far as a disaster blow-up stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, take that, Academy.
Yeah. And I have to give it credit where it's due here. So I'm going to say classic.
All right. Then before we get to me and Paul's rain, we go to our reflex capacitors. They're what make this time travel possible. But we ask you guys to rate these movies along with us. And your votes combined, we get a classic from you guys as well. So thank you for voting. So that's three classics so far. Paul, you had predicted classic, but I'm curious if anyone, if you too changed your vote like Babo.
If anybody has not seen this, like even if you're like a crotchety old man or whatever, I would recommend seeing this film if you hadn't seen it.
Okay.
So, and turn your brain off. It's a popcorn movie. You know, it's fun, explosions, that kind of action, kind of know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
If you're one of these Academy Awards snobs, I would recommend that you watch this movie because it's fun, unlike these other movies that you like to hail. So classic for me.
Classic for you. I can't deny what you all are saying. I enjoyed this movie. It was fun. I could see it being a little long. I didn't really think they extended it. I don't think you can buy the theatrical, at least not to stream. I think you're stuck getting the extended. So if you can get the theatrical, I would just stick with that, especially if you haven't seen this before. Definitely just go with the theatrical, but yeah, definitely a classic for me as well. So according to the Retro Rewind podcast, we rate Independence Day a undisputed or unanimous classic film. We would recommend anyone go see this, whether or not you've seen it before. Even though it makes Bob feel all dirty and whatnot. But now it's time to stick around 1996 and find out where you can find us at.
Return to 20XX overridden. The ComSAS broadcasting while awaiting return coordinates.
Feels good to still be in 1996. But we're probably going to be traveling back to 20XX soon. But we wouldn't have been able to travel anywhere if it weren't for our amazing reflex capacitors, namely Deborah Powers, Geek Devotions, Drew of the Cellcast, Ashley Ruiz, Kenethan, Fabulous Lomax, Rosie Lomax, That's Our Bob. Oh, he's right here!
Woo!
D Tungsten, Dale, Mr. Lost, Daryl Hafner, Cool Deluxe, Dustin, Redeemed Otaku, in addition to two other awesome patrons as well. Thank you all so much for keeping the Gigawatts coming. And if you want to help us keep flying and get bonus content for your generosity, head over to RetroRewindPodcast.com/support to start.
Hey, Francisco.
Yes.
Do you like being sponsored by PaulJPowers.com?
It's great, yes.
All right. Well, let's get a second opinion. Let's ask Jeff.
Well, yes, it's great to be sponsored by PaulJPowers.com or even a fat lady. But regardless, I'm simply saying that this stream finds a way.
Right. So, Francisco is...
Yeah.
For anyone who wants to support the show but doesn't want to take a ding from their virtual wallet, is there a way they can do that, supporting the show?
Yes, your podcast player will find a way. If you probably enjoyed this episode if you've made it this far. So if you aren't driving, tap the share icon in your podcast player for this episode and send it to a friend saying, I know you like disaster movies or I know you like Independence Day, so I thought you would like this podcast on it.
Cool. And I'll bet they'll thank you for it.
I bet so, too.
And speaking of thanking people, we want to give a big United World hug to Babo and Patch for sharing their ideas and support.
Supporting us with their thoughts and
that's
feelings
what
about.
I'm trying to say. Yeah, sorry. I had to try to get into my brain. I wasn't wearing my tinfoil hat, sorry. But yes, thank you, Babo and Patch. So let's go and find where we can find out more about you. We'll start with Bobbo. How can people find you online? Is there anything cool you got going on if you want to be found?
Yeah, well, usually not, but I guess I'll take the hug over a punch to the exoskeleton.
There you go. But,
regardless, no.
All right, cool.
All right. Yeah. Good to know. Right. Thank you for being here, Bobbo.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, you can always look for me at pauljpowers.com, but I'm not there. But
there you go.
If you got to kill some time, go for it.
Follow the links. You might get there.
It's like a Where's Waldo or Where's Bobbo and pauljpowers.com.
You can find them. Trust me, there are links that, yeah. All right. And Patch, how can people find you online? Is there anything cool you got going on?
Yeah, you can find me at Shoeless Patch on Twitter, ShoeLessPatch.
What's a Twitter?
Sorry, formerly known as Twitter, X, Y, Z, whatever the letter is today. I don't know. I refuse to give into that dribble, especially since I can still type in twitter.com and go there. But anyway, yeah, you can find me there independently. I also, I host a TV show podcast celebrating the TV series that live behind streaming services like Netflix, Disney Plus, whatnot, called An Original Series. You can find information on that on Twitter or X or whatever the letter is again.
Did you say an original series or an original series?
No, an original.
Oh, like, okay.
Everything is original.
And.
Okay.
And.
I thought it was like, this Cobra Kai is so unoriginal. It's like a Karate Kid knockoff.
Yeah. Francisco and I have actually just finished talking about the first season of Cobra Kai, and it'll drop probably later this summer as we're moving into the fall.
Nice.
But I also co-host Feelin' Film at FeelinFilm. We're actually finishing up the last few episodes of our podcast. We're sunsetting it here in the next few weeks. The episodes will be online forever because it's the internet. And so feel free to follow and check out more of those episodes that are in the backlog. We'll have well over 400 for you to check out. And awesome. Of the mainline episodes, plus there are several others in sort of special categories. But just start with Shoeless Patch, and then you can find other stuff from my bio if you didn't get all that information.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, Bobbo. Thank you so much, Patch. Thank you to my not an alien, awesome friend and co-host, Paul, and all you rewinders, new or old, for another fun voyage.
You're welcome. And you can find me, pauljpowers.com, at pauljpowers.com.
No, oh, I should have known. You can find me on our Discord for show announcements or just to say hi. Join us there at retrorewindpodcast.com/Discord. And if you want to find out more about the game I am designing, the tabletop board game I'm designing, go to junkyardjuggernauts.com.
Maybe it's a game.
This podcast is a proud member of Culture Box, a curated collection of podcasts, videos, and articles that will provide you a balanced meal of content. You will find culture celebrated for its past and future, satirized for its extremes, explored in study, and created anew in story. Point your web browser to culturebox.media.
And as the alien overlord just said, we are now part of the Culture Box Media Network. Find all shows unpacking truth through story, comedy, and geekery at culturebox.media.
Thank you, Exo, and thank you all for listening. We pray you are more joyful today than when you first hit play. But like a Pokemon, we gotta catch you all later for the next episode of the Retro Rewind Podcast.
Rewinders of the Lost Spot mission complete. Review audio ship's logs for more details.
That's what I call a close encounter.